On 11th June 1999, devotees were at Tirupati. This was the last day of the South India Yatra. At this place, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj narrated the entire story of the appearance of Lord Venkateshwara.
Mahaprabhu chali aila tripati trimale chaturbhuja murti deki yenkhatadre kale chale. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next arrived at Tirupati and Trimala, where he saw a four-handed deity. Then he next proceeded toward Venkata Hill, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Sri Chaitanya Bhakti Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has actually described the chronological order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit. The Tirupati temple is sometimes called Tirupatura. It is situated on the northern side of Arkata in the district of Chandragiri. It is a very famous holy place of pilgrimage. In pursuance of his name, Venkateshwar, the four-handed Lord Vishnu, the deity of Balaji, with his potencies named Sri and Bhu, is located on the Venkata Hill, about 8 miles from Tirupati. This Venkateshwar deity is the form of Lord Vishnu, and the place where he is situated is known as Venkata Kshetra. There are many temples in southern India, but this Balaji temple is especially opulent. A great fair is held there in the months of September and October. There is a railway station called Tirupati on the Southern Railway. Nimna Tirupati is located in the valley of the Venkata Hill. There are several temples there also, among which are Govindaraj and the deity of Lord Ramchandra. This is a nice place. Everything is nice if you are remembering Krishna. Everything is hellish if you forget Krishna. For a devotee, like gopis, they are content to live in hell if in their heart they know that they have done some service to Krishna. But even the heavenly planets would be an utterly miserable situation if within our hearts we were not feeling that we were pleasing Krishna through our service in that place. Wherever devotees gather together to glorify Krishna with sincere devotion, that place becomes the spiritual world. Wherever great personalities who are preaching the glories of the Lord are present, the touch of their feet makes that place the spiritual world. So our concern is how to remember Krishna and how to please Krishna through our service. We should not take seriously any other consideration of life, because we see through our own experience how temporary the cycles of material nature, through the agency of dualities, appear and disappear. One moment everything is so wonderful, and the next moment a crisis, a tragedy. This is the nature of life. You can be so happy, and then the next moment the misery is so great that the thought of the past happiness cannot do anything for your heart. So this is the world we live in. Thus the great acharyas have taught us that our real happiness is in remembering Krishna. And devotees, they try to create environments by which we can remember Krishna. This beautiful place on the Venkatadri Hills is one of the most popular spiritual spots on earth. We see how very well kept it is. Nice gardens, lawns are all cared for so diligently, varieties of flowers, trees well pruned. Especially in India, it's very rare to see something like this. Of course, if you go to the Western world, the palaces of kings, the city parks, they're also very well kept. But people go there simply to mostly enjoy romantic, lusty affairs in these places. Or else just to see, to take some photos, or to eat some unmentionable items. But here at Venkatadri, all of the wonderful efforts of these devotees to beautify this land, it is all really for the purpose of an inspiring a devotional mood for people to come to hear and chant the glories of the Lord and to worship the Lord. Therefore, we are very happy, especially when all we have to do is come and hear and chant. Other people do all the maintenance work, and we just come and hear and chant. Very convenient. At New Vrindavan, we have learned how difficult it is to maintain anything of a large content. Gardens, buildings, very difficult. However, in Krishna consciousness, we are not concerned with what is difficult or what is easy. We are concerned with what pleases Krishna. That's all. We should not even think about whether something is hard to do or easy to do. As a mother with a child, she doesn't think that it's difficult to take care of my child tonight. Let it die. She doesn't think it's easy. She does it because the child needs it. Similarly, in our service to Lord Krishna, the idea of easy, difficult, whether it brings me happy or distress, should not even be considered. What should be considered is this what Krishna wants? Will this please him? Is it right? If it is, we must do it. So we have come on this South Indian Yatra not to enjoy, but to become purified. And sometimes we enjoyed, and sometimes we suffered. But through both, we were equally purified. We went to Kurumakshetra, then to Singhachalam, Vishakhapatnam. At Kurumakshetra, we saw the beautiful murti of Kurumadev. We bathed in the Kund, besides that ancient temple. At Singhachalam, we visited the holy temple of Jiyada Narasimha. Then we took bath in the ocean at Vishakhapatnam. Next, we traveled to Kovur, where we both bathed in the holy river Godavari and discussed the glories of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meeting with Srila Ramananda Rai. We next went to Mangalagiri, where we had the darshan of Sri Pana Narasimha. We took our bath in the holy river Krishna. Then we went to Ahovalam. We visited the nine forms of Lord Narasimhadev. Many of us visited the Ugrastamba. I'm sure you will not forget that experience for some time. When we were doing Harinam Sankirtan through the streets of Tirupati, there was that construction and there was that deep ditch where they were digging. I saw the devotees were fearlessly dancing right at the edge of it. Even though factually if you fell, you would have broken your head and died, or at least broken your neck and been put in critical condition. But after walking at the edge of Ugrastamba mountain, this seemed like it was completely harmless. Everything is relative. Then we came here to Tirupati. Did every one of you have darshan with Sri Venkateshwar today? How many? Is it the first time you have ever come? Say Hari Bol if it is. How many have come before? Most of you, it is your first time. This deity of Balaji is very, very powerful form of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. People come here from all parts of the world. Especially during this type of time of the season, and even more during holidays, people stand in line to see the form of Venkateshwar, sometimes for days. Did you see the long lines today? You didn't see. You were, because you had paid extra money several months in advance, and because of Sitaram and Radha Krishna's influence, Sitaram Alva and Radha Krishna Prabhu, because of both the Aishwarya Bhav and the Madhurya Bhav, Sitaram and Radha Krishna Prabhus, due to their influence and your extra payments and months in advance, you were able to get in quite quickly. But yesterday, the day before, this whole month, the average line is 30 hours. Sometimes during bigger festivals, people wait 3-4 days. They camp out in line. If you lose your place, you have to go to the back again. So people live in line. They sleep all night. in their place in line, and they wake up and continue. And how long is the darshan? Because all of you came with Dr. Alwa, you actually had a relatively long darshan. Most people, plus you had to pay a lot, so you got special time. Most people are just chalo, you just go very fast. But somehow or other, we should know that the Lord, His eyes are everywhere. And He's seeing how eager we are and how patient we are to see Him. Rupa Goswami explains these are the symptoms of surrender, to be very eager and enthusiastic and at the same time patient. And those who have these qualities, Krishna will soon reciprocate and actually reveal Himself in such a way that with our heart we can see Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This morning we had darshan of Sri Balaji, and at this time we'd like to very briefly speak something of what we have heard of the significance of this holy place and the history behind it. We have just read how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and worshipped the deity here. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, it describes how Nityananda Prabhu also spent time here. Ramanujacharya established a very, very stronghold in his sampradaya here at Tirupati. In the history of Sripad Madhvacharya, it describes how several times he came here also to visit with his devotees to worship Lord Venkateshwar. The great Alwas of the Sri Sampradaya, these Alwars, they also spent so much of their devotional lives worshipping Sri Venkateshwar. What an immense fortune we have to be here together today. It is described in Srimad Bhagavatam how in the Satya Yuga, Hiranyaksha, due to his exploitative activities, he created a situation where the earth went to the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. At that time, the devatas approached Lord Brahma, who prayed to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu appeared from the nose of Brahma in the form of Sri Varahadeva. He killed Hiranyaksha, and he lifted the earth with his tusks and brought her to a safe position on top of the Garbhodak ocean. Bhudevi, the goddess of the earth, is an expansion of goddess Lakshmi. She was very much pleased to be reunited with her Lord in the form of Sri Varahadeva. Actually, he is her eternal consort. In Vaikuntha, Bhuvaraha reside eternally. So Bhudevi, who is the goddess of this earth, invited Varahadeva to remain with her on this earth planet. So Sri Varahadeva decided that he would he would satisfy her desire. He called for Garuda and asks Garuda to fly to Vaikuntha and bring one of his special favorite mountains down to the earth so that he and Bhudevi could reside here together on that mountain. That mountain was brought down, and it is today called Tirumala. In fact, we are sitting on it right now. This is a mountain that was brought, that was imported from Vaikuntha by Garuda himself. There's also a story of how Shesha, the divine expansion of the Lord, who appears sometimes as his couch, sometimes as his bed, sometimes as his slippers. That same Adi Shesha, he incarnated on this earth as the seven hills in which Tirumala is situated. Therefore, these seven hills are called Sheshadri. Knowing that the Supreme Lord would come to live on these hills, he wanted to be here to support his divine pastimes. The narration continues how Narada Muni approached great sages who were performing yajna and inquired from them, "To whom are you offering the fruits of your yajna to? Of all the different devatas or gods, who is the greatest?" Some of these rishis were thinking that Brahma is the greatest of the god, some Vishnu and some Shiva. So there was a very, very interesting dialogue that took place amongst them. And they were thinking, the greatest of all must be that person who is completely transcendental to the modes of material nature. They all unanimously elected Bhrigu Muni to test these gunavatars, to see of them who was the greatest. So Bhrigu Rishi, he first went to the abode of Brahma. Brahma is his father. Brahma was very happy to see Bhrigu Muni, but Bhrigu Muni didn't say anything to honor his father. In fact, he outright ignored him. Lord Brahma, understanding that his son was completely breaching all etiquette and just basic human mannerisms, became very, very angry. But somehow or other, he contained his anger and didn't say anything. But Bhrigu Muni saw that his father was very angry. So he left that place. He was thinking he failed the test. Then he went to Mount Kailash. Lord Shiva was sitting with Parvati. Shiva is Bhrigu Muni's elder brother. When he saw his younger brother coming, Shiva came up, "Oh, Bhrigu, I'm so happy to see you. Welcome to Kailash." He came to embrace him. Bhrigu Muni, he said, "Get away from me. Don't touch me. You smell terrible. You have ashes from dead bodies all over your body. You wear skulls as garlands. You associate with ghosts and untouchable people. If you were to touch me, I would immediately have to take bath in the Ganges to purify myself from the intense contamination." Lord Shiva became very angry. He picked up his trident, was about to punish Bhrigu. But Parvati, she said, "No, no, my lord, he's your brother." So Shiva cooled down. Bhrigu Muni left. He failed the test. Then he went to Svetadvip, the Vaikuntha planet within this universe in which Vishnu resides. Well, Lord Vishnu was laying down in his bed, being served by Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. Bhrigu Muni discharged into the room, and while the Lord was still laying down, he kicked him right in the chest. Lord Vishnu, very, very compassionately, he with folded hands, he said, "Oh, Bhrigu Muni, please forgive me. Please forgive me that you came in and I didn't even get up in time to honor you and welcome you to my home. And my chest is so hard, and your lotus feet are so soft. I'm afraid maybe I caused some pain to your feet. Please, let me massage your feet." Then Vishnu started to very kindly massage the lotus feet of Bhrigu. Bhrigu Muni was treated this way. He began to weep, tears flowing from his eyes. "You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are completely transcendental to the modes of material nature. You are all merciful and all compassionate, even to an offender like me. Please forgive me." According to Chaitanya Bhagavat, at that time, after begging apologies, Bhrigu Muni, seeing the qualities of Lord Vishnu, began to dance in ecstasy. Dancing and dancing and dancing, weeping, crying, hair standing on end, loudly chanting the holy name. Bhrigu Muni so blissfully returned to all the sages and explained his report. And everyone from that day on constantly worshipped Lord Vishnu by constantly hearing his glories and chanting his holy names. It was a happy time. But Lakshmi Devi, she was feeling very, very depressed and angry. Although Lord Vishnu, he tolerated this offense with a very gracious heart, Lakshmi Devi, being a chaste and faithful wife, she could not tolerate the offense that was done to her husband. She said to Lord Narayan that you may forgive this person. That is your nature. But I have seen this Brahmin whimsically kick you right in the chest. And because I have seen this abominable act, I have incurred a very heavy, unforgivable sin. The sin of witnessing you accepting this offense is so great that I cannot live with myself any longer. I must go away from here. I must perform severe penance to wash away the sin that was incurred by my seeing this offense to you. Let us take this story in its instruction to us. Lakshmi Devi considered herself to have incurred such a sin because she witnessed an offense to the Lord. We know that an offense to a devotee of the Lord is even greater than an offense to the Lord himself. Therefore, our Vaishnavacharyas explain that if you speak offense to the Lord, great sin comes upon you. But even if you see an offense or hear an offense, you become sinful. how careful we should be. Sometimes devotees talk and even blaspheme others, and we happen to be there. Even if we don't agree with them, the fact that we heard it, sins have come upon us. And sometimes so many devotees in so many places have so many difficulties, and they wonder why. This is our philosophy. It's not just a minor detail of the philosophy. We're reminded of it everywhere throughout the scriptures. But in Kali Yuga, we take things very lightly. We think, because offenses are such normal occurrences, we don't think they're very serious. Anybody can speak anything about anyone at any time. However, if there's an offense to the Lord or his devotees, that is a sin. So Lakshmi was thinking herself that she had incurred a great sin. She was contaminated by a great sin just by seeing Bhrigu Muni kick the Lord with his foot. Now, actually, Bhrigu Muni did not commit any offense. Because actually, the Lord, according to Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, entered into his body specifically to cause him to do this just because he wanted to establish his supreme position to all the world forever. He was actually doing it to glorify the Lord. I want to tell you something, how delicate Vaishnava etiquette is. If you commit an offense to Bhrigu Muni for kicking the Lord in the chest, it's sinful. Because he's a Vaishnava. And not only was he a Vaishnava, but he was actually doing a very, very specialized, uncomprehendable service. It is also explained that Brahma and Shiva, do you really think that they were angry at Bhrigu Muni? According to our Vaishnava literatures, no. They were not angry at him at all. They pretended to be angry. Why? Because they wanted all of their followers and everyone else in creation to know that Vishnu is supreme. They acted very, very angry just to lose the test so that Vishnu would win. It was their way of glorifying Lord Krishna. So Lakshmi Devi, she left Vaikuntha and came to the holy place called Kolhapur. Kolhapur is the place to do penance for sins. So Lakshmi Devi performed very severe tapasya in Kolhapur. Meanwhile, in Vaikuntha, Lord Vishnu, he was thinking that, what is this beautiful land of Vaikuntha without Lakshmi? All the kalpa vriksha trees, the celestial lakes and rivers, all the beautiful people with four arms. They cannot give me any pleasure without Lakshmi Devi. I have no reason to live without Lakshmi Devi. So the Lord decided that he would also leave Vaikuntha to come down to the earth to perform tapasya, to somehow or other appease Lakshmi Devi. So he came to the earth. He walked and walked and walked. The Lord walked approximately half of the earth until he came to this place. mountain range called Seshadri, where an Adishesha was waiting for him with great devotion. The Lord then found an anthill, entered in through the hole at the top of the anthill, and went under the ground of the anthill to perform meditation. For a long time he was doing meditation, not drinking anything, not eating anything, not even sleeping. The demigod saw this, and it was bringing great grief to their heart. Lord Brahma approached Lord Shiva and said, "Our Lord hasn't gotten any prasad in so many days. We should go down and serve him." So they made a plan. Lord Brahma took the form of a cow. Lord Shiva took the form of a little calf. They approached Lakshmi Devi with their idea. Lakshmi Devi, to serve the Lord, she agreed to temporarily accept the role of a cowherd girl. They came to this area. There was a king of the name Akashraj. I'm sorry, that comes later. There was a king here, and that king was approached by this beautiful, beautiful cowherd girl with the cow and calf, and said, I am selling this cow. Would you like to buy?" The king said, "How much is it?" She said, 1,000 gold coins. The court of the king was thinking, this is outrageous. 1,000 gold coins for a cow? But as you know, the way people in this world are, if you charge a big price, people think it must be very valuable. Srila Prabhupada said that about his books. If you give my books away, people won't think they're very valuable. If you charge a good price, they'll think, oh, this is very valuable, I must read it. So Lakshmi had this psychology. King said, "Oh, 1,000 coins? This must be a very valuable cow. I will buy it." So he brought the cow and gave the cow to his cowherd man and told him to take him out to the pastures and bring him the milk every day. So the cowherd man every day would come to these Seshadri mountains with the herd of cows. What he would do is, after he brought them to a nice place with green grasses, he would find the tree and go to sleep. As he was sleeping, this cow, who was actually Lord Brahma, would immediately run away from the cowherd man into the herd, go right to the anthill, place her udder just over the hole of the anthill, and let down all her milk. And the Lord, who was incarnated, he would hold his head up and open his mouth, and the milk would go directly in. So this happened every day. One day, the queen, she decided she wanted to supervise the milking of the cows. She was watching all the cows being milked. She saw that very, very beautiful, expensive cow. There was no milk coming out. She asked, "Why is there no milk?" She looked at the cowherd man and said, "Did you secretly milk this cow and keep all the milk for yourself?" He said, "No, of course I didn't. Of course I didn't. For some reason, this cow never gives any milk. But she just had a calf. I have seen her calf. She must be giving milk. Are you stealing the milk?" "No, I do not believe you. If tomorrow this cow does not give milk, I will cut off your head." Hare Krishna. Well, the next day, this cowherd man was thinking, "I have to find out why this cow doesn't give milk." brought the cows to the pasture. He saw a nice tree and lay down to pretend to sleep. But with his eyes slightly open, he was watching that cow. Then he started pretending to snore. The cow ran away. He ran after the cow, but the cow didn't see him. He chased after. The cow came to the anthill and profusely started offering all her milk into the hole in the anthill. The cowherd man was so angry. What is this cow doing? She will be the very cause of my death due to this whimsical behavior. He lost so much control of his mind and senses, he picked up an axe to attack the cow to kill her. With the axe, he threw it down toward the cow. Just at that very moment, the Supreme Personality of Godhead jumped up from the hole in the anthill and placed his head out in the axe. The axe hit him right in the center of the forehead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was bleeding profusely. Blood was literally flying. The cowherd man fell to the ground. Some say he was unconscious, some say he was dead. Meanwhile, Venkateshwar, this great Srinivas incarnation of the Lord, he was in so much pain. He was just sitting, holding his head. At that time, Brihaspati appeared. And Brihaspati asked him what had happened. He explained. He told him, there's a certain herb in these forests. It's very medicinal. If you place this herb on your head, make a paste out of it, then it will relieve your pain and will heal it. So the Lord was in great pain, searching for this herb. This is a wonderful story. How the Lord protects his devotees. We read Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmani Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo. The Lord is very, very much always concerned with the welfare of the Brahmins and the cows. Why? Because he's merciful to every living being. Every living being, purpose of life in this world is self-realization. And the cow is the very emblem of religious principles, the barometer of the spirituality of any society is how we take care of the cows. She feeds us milk when we are babies like our mother. She supplies ghee for sacrifice, ghee to make wonderful preparations to offer to the Lord. And the Brahmins, they are teaching us the path of perfection. So the Lord wants to protect mostly those who are giving the most compassionate service to the whole of society. And especially, the Lord is always eager to protect his devotees. In this case, even at the cost of his own well-being. We see in the temple of Venkateshwar, the Lord is always given, it looks like a type of tilak. You have all seen photographs of that also. Covering most of his eyes and in the center of his forehead. The Lord, for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years, has decided to be decorated like this, just to show the world how much he loves his devotees. just to give us confidence that Krishna will always protect his devotees. So the Lord was searching for this herb, and he came upon this kund. It's called the Pushkarini Tirtha, that big lake that we saw when we were circumambulating last night. That was also a lake from Vaikuntha that Garuda brought down for Varahadev's pleasure. While he was there, Lord Srinivas met Lord Varahadev. When they met, it was a very pleasing and loving reunion between these two supreme personalities. Varahadev asked, "What are you doing here on earth? And what happened to your head? Why are you bleeding like this?" And the Lord said that he told the whole story. How Bhrigumuni kicked me, and I washed his feet and massaged his feet. And Lakshmi, she didn't like this, so she left me. She's doing tapasya now. So I came down, and now I'm doing tapasya in this anthill, and I tried to save this cow, and this is what happened to me. The Lord asked Varahadev that, "I understand that actually you are the proprietor of this tract of land. In fact, you saved the earth. Therefore, you're really the proprietor of the earth, and especially this place where you are living. So I am requesting you to kindly give me on rent some place where I can stay." But the Lord said, "But because the goddess Lakshmi has left me, I don't have any money. So I do not know what I will give you in rent." Varahadev said that, "I know in the future many hundreds and thousands and millions of people will come to have your darshan here. Give me this one rent, that whoever comes to see you, before worshipping you, will first come to see me." So the Lord said, "Yes. All of my devotees, before they come to worship me, they will first offer their prayers and worship you in your Varahadev form." So this is the tradition to this very day in Tirupati, that the proper way before we approach Sri Venkateshwar is first we offer our prayers and worship to Varaha Swami. How many of you went to Varahadev temple last night before? So you are all bona fide candidates for the darshan of Venkateshwar. Varahadev then told him, "This anthill area is now yours." And he told him that there was a very, very loving, motherly devotee who was personally serving him, that he would like to offer for the service of Sri Venkateshwar. He said, "She can cook for you, she could make this herbal paste for your wounded head. She will do everything for you. She is your mother." Her name was Bakula Malika, also called Bakula Devi. Bakula Devi was previously Yashoda in Lord Krishna's Leela. She is a partial expansion incarnation of Mother Yashoda. And it is said that Krishna left Vrindavan when he was only about 10.5 years old. And it is natural for a mother to like to see her children married. Devaki was involved in so many marriages of Krishna, 16,108. But Yashoda never got to do like this. So Krishna, knowing her heart, he promised her, in my next incarnation, you will be there to arrange for my marriage. So Bakula Devi, she treated Lord Srinivas just like a mother treats her own child. She would go and collect nice types of fruits and vegetables and prepare delicious prasad for him several times a day. She would get the proper herbs and make a proper paste and apply it to his head. She would offer him such sweet words. She loved him with such motherly love that Srinivas was so much satisfied with living on this Venkatadri mountain. There was a king. His name was Akshara. Akashraj. His name was Akashraj. And his wife's name was Dharani Devi. They were very, very great devotees of the Lord. However, they had no children. After so many attempts, no child was born. So they approached the great sages and rishis and asked what to do. If a king and queen does not have a child, we actually fail our purpose. Because unless we train someone to inherit the kingdom for us, then we are not doing proper service to our subjects. And besides that, the duty of a king is to raise a child, make him a king, so that we can go to the forest and become self-realized. So the great sages explained that previously Maharaj Dasarath, as well as Maharaj Janak, they performed a particular yajna, a royal yajna, for the purpose of having a child. So all the arrangements were being made. And it was explained to the king, now you must plow the field or the area where you are going to perform the yajna. So the king himself had to be the plowsman. So they took the bullocks and the plow, and the king was going around circumambulating the field of the yajna. And in one particular place, the hook of the plow, when it was deep in the ground, it latched on to a golden box. That golden box was pulled out of the ground. Automatically, it opened. Within that box was a big, beautiful lotus flower. And upon that lotus flower was the most charming, golden-colored girl, smiling and waving at King Akashraj. The king was very much pleased. He brought the little child to his wife, Dharani, and they accepted her as their own daughter. And they performed the yajna. And soon after that, the queen was pregnant, and she gave birth to a son named Vasudam. The history of this child is very interesting. Actually, when she first was born, there was a voice in the sky explaining that she was actually the goddess Lakshmi herself who had appeared. And when the Brahmin saw that she was born on a lotus flower, they gave her the name Padmavati. Padmavati, in her previous birth, is explained. This is explained in Ramayana, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in different ways. Not different ways, but different aspects of the story. If you remember, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India, he met one Brahmin who was lamenting like anything, so much so he wouldn't even eat, because because Sita was stolen by Ravana. Even though it happened so many millions of years before, still he couldn't get over this terrible, terrible piece of information that he read in the scriptures. He invited Lord Chaitanya for prasad. It was noon. He didn't even start cooking. It was 3 o'clock. He still didn't cook. Lord Chaitanya said, "Are you going to cook?" He said, "How could I cook? Sita has been stolen by Ravana. I should enter into fire. How could I even live if my worshipable goddess has been stolen by this Rakshasa?" Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that actually, Ravana cannot touch Sita. This was a false, illusory Sita. So you eat. Please believe me. So the Brahmin, just to please Lord Chaitanya, he took prasad. Later on, Lord Chaitanya continued his travels. I think it was around Madurai that he actually, then he went to Rameshwaram, but he found within a scripture, the Kurama Purana, the story of the chaste woman. There, it explained how before Ravana stole Sita, Agni, the fire god, took the real Sita and put an illusory Sita in her place. And that was who Ravana took. And later on, when Ravana was killed, Ram conquered Lanka, he wanted to test Sita's chastity. So she entered into fire, and Agnidev brought the original Sita back. Now, in this particular Puranic narration, there is further detail in this. There was a great sage named Kushadvaj. He was performing a yajna. From his chanting of Vedic hymns, a beautiful young girl was born. She was a partial expansion of Lakshmi Devi. He named her Vedavati. Padmavati was named Padmavati because she was born from a lotus, and Vedavati was born because she was born from the chanting of Vedas. Her father understood that she was a very, very special person, and that no one was fit to marry her except Lord Vishnu himself. So he told Vedavati, "You should go to the jungles of the Himalayas and you should perform tapasya with your mind fixed on only getting Vishnu as your husband." So she went. She was so beautiful. Her charm was so glorious that many of the greatest kings and princes were coming before her, begging to marry. But she would tell them all, "Never. My mind is fixed on the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. I will accept no one else but you." For long years, she performed tapasya. One day, Ravana happened to be flying overhead in his airplane. When he saw the beauty of Vedavati, he was infatuated. He landed his plane, came before Vedavati, and said, "You are so beautiful, and I am so great. I am begging you, marry me now. I cannot live without you. Impossible. I am the king of Lanka. I have conquered Indra. All the demigods tremble in fear of me. I will make you the prominent queen of my entire kingdom, and I will give you all riches and opulences. Come with me. Be my wife." Vedavati very respectfully told him, "I'm sorry, sir, but it is not possible. That I have fixed my mind on Lord Vishnu, I will accept no one else as my husband. If he does not accept me, then I will give up my body." Ravana asked, "Who are you?" She said, my name is Vedavati. My father is the great Brahmin sage, Kushadvaj. Ravana said, then this is a good match. Because my father is Vishrava, my mother is Keshini, but my grandfather is Pulastya Muni, who's the son of Brahma. Pulastya Muni is a very great Brahmin, so there's no incompatibility. Besides that, if you do not agree to marry me, then I will take you by force. She explained to him that my life is for Vishnu and Vishnu alone. This was very much instructive also. Ravana will come to us with so many temptations in our life. But as devotees, we should be faithful and chaste as the property of the Lord. However Ravana tempts us, however Maya intimidates us, challenges us, threatens us, will we remain faithful, even at the cost of our lives, to our service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So Ravana decided that he would rape Vedavati by force. So he came to embrace her. What she did is she very intensely meditated on Agnidev, the fire god. And then just before entering into that fire, she cursed Ravana. That if ever you try to forcibly violate a woman's chastity again, you will die. And a chaste woman like me will be the cause of the destruction of your entire dynasty. Then she entered fire and disappeared. What happened when she entered the fire is Agnidev personally brought her into his own care, into his own planet. Later on, Ravana, with the help of Marichi, tried to kidnap Sita in Panchavati. You remember that place? Maricha took the form of a golden deer, and Ravana, who has already been completely addicted to the idea of Sita just by hearing about her beauty from Sarvanaka, he had this plan where Ram and Lakshman were tempted to go away from Sita in the forest by Maricha the deer. Then Ravana disguised himself as a sadhu to beg alms from Sita, knowing that Sita is always charitable to those who are in distress. Just before Ravana stole Sita away, Ram, knowing that this danger would come, he invoked Agnidev. Sita then entered into the fire of Agni, and Agni replaced her with Vedavati, who looked identical to the real Sita. So for practically 1 year, Vedavati was terribly tortured, assaulted, abused by Ravana. But she remained completely faithful and chaste to Lord Ram the whole time. At the end of the Battle of Sri Lanka, when Sita was tested, her chastity, and put into fire, again Agnidev brought Vedavati out. I mean, he brought the real Sita out. At that time, Agnidev and Sita both appeal to Lord Ram that Vedavati, what she has done, what kind of service she has offered you, you should take her as your wife. She's done so much penance to receive your mercy. Take her as your wife. Sita begged Ram to take her as a co-wife. But Lord Ram said, no, in this life, I have vowed to only have one wife. But in my next incarnation, I promise I will marry Vedavati. So this Vedavati was born as Padmavati. She was brought up by her parents. She became the very reservoir of all attractive qualities. It came time for her marriage. In those days, when a girl was about 14 years old, if she still wasn't married, the parents would really think that they were failures. So, Dharani Devi and Akashraj were looking all around for a suitable husband. They were sending messengers to all the different kingdoms of the world. But they could find no one who could compare to her. So they were wondering what to do. One day, Narada Muni, he came to the kingdom disguised as an old Brahmin. And he looked at the palm of Padmavati and told her that you are the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and very soon you will be married to Lord Vishnu. And she didn't really take it very seriously. So she would go in this area. She would be, the name of the kingdom was Narayanpur. One day she was in a very pleasing garden with her friends, playing. On that same day, Lord Srinivas told his mother, Bakula Devi, that I desire to go into the forest to scare away the wild animals on a hunt. So she said, it's very dangerous, you should not go. He said, no danger for me. So she made some nice prasad for him, and then he very happily went into the forest. While he was there, he saw a wild elephant. So he began to chase after the wild elephant. The wild elephant ran right into the garden where Padmavati and her friends were playing. The wild elephant caused great fear to them. They ran away. Srinivas chased the elephant away. And then he saw Padmavati. The natural love between the Supreme Lord and his consort was awakened. And the natural love of the consort for the Supreme Lord was awakened. So they looked upon each other, and Srinivas approached her, said, introduced himself, and told her that I want to marry you. I think you must have descended from heaven. And as they were talking, the maidservants of the princess, they happened to hear this and see this, and they thought that this is very improper, that you are a hunter. What right does a hunter to propose marriage to the princess? So they said, you get away from here. They began to throw stones at him. And being harassed by these stones, he got on his horse and went away. When he went home, Bakula saw that he was very depressed. Plus he had all these sores all over his body. She said, please tell me what happened. He explained how I saw this beautiful young princess, and I want to marry her. But when I spoke to her, her maidservants threw all these stones upon me. Please help me to marry this lady. So Bakula Devi said, I will go, and I will make a proposal to her parents. So, actually, during that conversation, the Supreme Lord explained to Vakula Devi who he was, how he was actually Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how she was Vedavati in past life, and he came to earth especially just to marry her. So Vakula Devi promised him, I will make a proposal to the parents. So on her way, she came to a temple where the maidservants of Padmavati were worshipping the Lord, Shiva. They were praying like anything. Vakula Devi said, why are you praying like this? They said, because Padmavati is so sick. Nobody knows what to do with her. She hasn't eaten. She hasn't drunk anything. She hasn't been able to sleep ever since she saw this hunter in the forest. And her father and mother have brought the best doctors, and they've given all kinds of medications, but nothing helps. And they brought rishis and sages, but nobody knows what to do. They're thinking, maybe it is just some mental anxiety. So Vakula Devi said, I will also pray. Meanwhile, Lord Srinivas, he was thinking that I have to help Vakula Devi to make this arrangement. So he disguised himself as a gypsy fortune teller. Woman. And he came into the town of Narayanpur and started calling out, she started calling out, that I am a gypsy fortune teller woman and I can tell the future to anyone who wants to know. The people of the town told the queen, maybe she could tell what will happen to Padmavati. So the queen immediately called her. So Srinivas, in the disguise of a gypsy woman, came into the palace. She said, you have to bring me all sorts of articles for puja, and then you have to bring your daughter to me.